The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Cancel Too Soon, the podcast where we review TV series that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I'm a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a critic, and this is sort of a memorial episode.
Yeah. You know, again, we do a lot of TV shows that never got off the ground, featuring a lot of actors, and a lot of our shows that we do are really old, and a while ago we did an episode for Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, in which we talked about the various incarnations of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, and we did in that episode a failed pitch pilot. It wasn't a complete episode.
It was like a 15-minute episode.
Yeah, and it was going to be a sort of a, Electra Woman was like a popular 1980s superhero who had like hit the skids and, eventually started like moving her way back up in popularity because a young fan believed in her, and she was played by the great Marky Post from Night Court, and Marky Post was great in that show.
That well, and they were restaging Electra Woman and Dinah Girl as something really kind of corny, and so Electra Woman had grown into this incredibly crass character. It was just heavy smoking, heavy drinking, complete sex fiend kind of character.
Yeah, and she was great.
She was really wonderful. She was incredibly funny.
We were such a huge fan in that brief episode they did. And we were such a huge fan of Marky Post in this. And it's sad that Marky Post passed away this last week or so. And it really, really, really depressed us a lot. And we wanted to sort of check back to see if there was any Marky Post type of material that we missed that we could highlight because we were fans. And sure enough, we found a failed pilot, which is really quite a thing. And it has quite a name. And it is Maserati and the Brain.
Cufflinks. Now, don't tell me. This is for when I'm
taken prison. I've just tied you up.
Now, wait a second, Christopher. Wait a second. Why is it that you always have me taken prisoner? I haven't been taken prisoner in months.
But it happens to you a lot.
Don't remind me.
Lucky for you, you're wearing these electronic cufflinks. Just touch them together, they spark and burn the ropes away.
Now, you're a marvel. How did I manage before you came to live with me?
Beats me.
Narf.
Not to be confused with Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, they have very little in common with each other.
And it's not Maserati like the car. There's two S's, so I guess it's Maserati.
Well, and it's also, I think it's all A's. There's no E in it. But it's still, they're going off of, they're evoking the name.
Yeah.
They want you to think about the sexy car.
And the pilot was, it's a crime-fighting show. It was intended to be a crime-fighting show. And the main character, Maserati, is one of those idle billionaires who has nothing better to do with his time than to solve crimes.
Well, he's described as a soldier of fortune. He's a mercenary, but he gets paid incredibly well for it. And he lives at a mansion, and he has a personal valet, a butler, if you will, played by one of TV's most famous butlers, Christopher Hewitt, a.k.a. Mr. Belvedere, who would star in Mr. Belvedere a couple of years after this. If you never saw Mr. Belvedere, Mr. Belvedere was a story about a proper British butler who ended up working for, like, a typical suburban family.
I think there was some sort of weird, like, inheritance stipulation that he had to work for this.
Well, I don't know if it's explicitly a remake of the Charles Laughton movie, The Ruggles of Red Gap. But if you've never seen that movie, we talked about this on Only the Best on our Patreon show, where we review every Best Picture nominee. There's an incredibly funny 1930s comedy starring Charles Laughton as a proper British butler whose employer gambles him away while gambling with an American, like, new money millionaire. And he has to travel to California back when it was still like very much the frontier town.
So it's a butler in the Old West is the joke of that movie.
It's hilarious, that movie.
And Charles Laughton is one of the main reasons it works so well, just because he's such an amazing actor.
So like the gag is just sort of revisited. I don't know if it's directly or indirectly, but it's about
a proper British butler who has to live now in suburban America with these kind of blue collar dweebs.
I think I've seen every single episode of Mr. Belvedere.
Headed up by Bob Euchre and Marilyn Manson, if you believe the rumors.
Marilyn Manson was not on that show.
An actor who looked kind of like Marilyn Manson.
So you've got Daniel Pylon as the protagonist, Maserati. You might remember Daniel Pylon from such shows as Poltergeist, The Legacy. He was also in the original Left Behind, the movie. He was in the movie Shoot 'Em Up. He's had a long career. He passed away in 2018. He has an agent and also a girlfriend. And she's played by Marky Post. She finds him various missions to go on, you know, fabulous adventures that pay very, very well.
And she's very personable, and she's always very money-minded. She is concerned about the value of his missions.
I was a little disappointed that she's not in the show more, considering she's the only reason why we did this episode.
she shows up at the beginning, and then she's absent for a lot of the adventure, and then she shows up again at the end.
Yeah, but she always brings a lot of dignity to everything she did.
She's the Gates McFadden in Marker of this show. God.
I mean, yeah, but okay. But the gag of the show isn't that, okay, so he's like an exciting, sexy action-adventure hero who goes on adventures. We've seen that before. No. Aaron Spelling wouldn't produce a show that had no gimmick. The gimmick is that our hero Maserati has teamed up with his nephew Christopher, played by Peter Billingsley, a.k.a. the little kid star from A Christmas Story, who's still a little kid. This show aired in 1982.
That's before Christmas Story, isn't it? Christmas Story 83?
Around there, yeah. So, like, Peter Billingsley was a child actor.
Let me look up the dates on
Please look that up for me. Peter Billingsley was a child actor. And the whole gag is Peter Billingsley's parents are scientists or researchers.
Christmas Story was 83. This was before.
Peter Billingsley's parents are like scientists or somehow off on this big research mission for like years. And they have asked his uncle to take care of him in that time. And his uncle is only too happy to do it. A, because he actually loves the kid. This isn't one of those things where it's like, I'm a curmudgeon and I don't want to hang out with the kid. They have a really positive, loving relationship. And that's actually kind of nice. Mm-hmm. The other reason he loves it is because Peter Billingsley's character is a child genius, and he ends up becoming his Q and coming up with all of these wild gadgets and like looking stuff up on computers. And so that's the gag. It's a kid gets to be James Bond's backup.
Here's kind of a really brilliant thing about this pilot is they let the kid be interested in that stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't behave like an adult. He's clearly not being... He behaves like a child.
Yeah, he's interested on a child level.
Kid stuff. So there's a bit in the middle of this pilot where they're all sitting around to dinner. And Christopher Hewitt's coming in and serving them dinner, and they're eating their meal. And Peter Billingsley, like, idly leans forward and eats one of his own buttons off of his shirt.
And everyone's like, what the hell are you doing?
What are you doing? And you think it's, like, this kind of weird, like, just kind of absurd kid thing. It's like, no, actually, these buttons are made, they're like vitamins. I made these vitamins that look like buttons.
Edible buttons, they actually have a lot of nutritional value. And my theory is, if you get kidnapped
which is how he begins every one of his inventions. If you get kidnapped for many days.
And Maserati's always just like, I haven't been taken hostage in months. Which is pretty funny.
Or he comes back and is like, why don't you invent something that prevents me from being kidnapped?
He's just like, well, that's no fun.
So the kid has this kind of like kid-like bloody-minded tendency toward kid-like stuff. And
Maserati is very committed to not letting the kid do anything dangerous. He's like, you have to stay home. He has like a ring that allows him to like contact the kid, like Dick Tracy's wristwatch or whatever. And he only turns it off when he's about to make out with a pretty lady. And the kid knows this.
Yeah. He's like, oh man, I was going to hear the kissy part. I mean, it's just weird when it's your uncle, but it's also you're a little kid, you're interested in that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but regardless, yeah, so that's like the only time he ever turns it off. But he's always like in his ear. He's, as you would call it in a Spider-Man Homecoming, the guy in the chair.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, he only wants him to stay home, and he wants him to stay safe. And of course, by the end of this episode, Peter Billingsley has some reason to run away in order to try to help Maserati. And of course, he gets in a lot of trouble and has to get saved. But it you know, when you put like a little kid in an action adventure situation, usually the idea is that the producers are doing this for the kids in the audience.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, like when they've introduced like the junior Ghostbusters and the real Ghostbusters animated series.
I don't understand the thinking behind a kid won't watch something unless there's a kid in it.
Yeah. Children want to be older. Well, children want to be older.
Yeah.
Adults want to be younger. Children want to be older. They're not imagining, I get to be the little kid who hangs out with the cool adults. Yeah, we just want to be the cool adults.
Yeah, they're projecting themselves into the adults.
So if you're going to put a kid in these things, the kid needs to be capable. And I think this is actually a pretty smart way of doing it, where the kid just gets to be a child prodigy and help.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually useful. He's, you know... Mr. Belvedere hates him, but other than that,
Christopher Hewitt
hates him, but like other than that, like he's actually like pretty welcome in the situation. He's not getting in the way.
And Christopher Hewitt character hates him not because he hates kids or he's annoyed by his brilliance or anything. He hates him because the Christopher Hewitt character is like Jeeves from the P.G. Wodehouse stories, and that he cannot abide by improper manners.
Yeah. He actually has a line. He's like, I'm a man's man. I'm a man's gentleman. I'm here to help you, an adult. I'm not a nanny. That's not what I do.
I'm not sure if you've read any Jeeves and Worcester stories.
Jeeves and Worcester's great, yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't read Jeeves and Worcester stories, please do. They're musical comedies on the page. But
You can watch, there's a really, really great old BBC series with Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry. Yeah. Great. Really, really funny.
Yeah, which is perfectly in spirit with the actual novels.
I find a better cast TV show than Jeeves and Worcester with those two. Yeah, there's no better Jeeves and Worcester. I can't think. I mean, I'm sure the people could do it, but that's perfect.
And Roger Ebert put this in my head, but I'm still waiting for Aardman to do a Castle Blandings series. But I want Aardman Animation to do Castle Blandings.
That would be so great to nail it.
In the books, Jeeves, he was paid handsomely, but he wasn't in it for the money. He was in it because he liked teaching Bertie Wooster, who was kind of this flighty idiot, how to behave properly.
Yeah.
So his payment at the end of the story, when Jeeves was proved right and he saved the day, is like, okay, Jeeves, order that suit I know you want me to wear. Like, I know you don't like this dandyish one that I've been wearing. I'm going to get rid of this one and I'll wear the suit you like. And Jeeves, he would never smile, but he'd like kind of smirk a little. Thank you, sir. that's what the Christopher Hewitt character evokes in this pilot. It's like he can't abide by the child, not because the child is like rascally or ruins stuff that he's doing, but because he is uncouth.
Yeah.
So he can't abide by that. And so I love the dynamic between these four main characters.
Yeah, the four main characters are actually the absolute best part of this show. Mm. They're well cast. The dynamic is pretty good. Obviously, it's a little too clever by half, and none of this is plausible, but whatever. If we're going to commit to this show,
let's meet it on its
own terms and let's give it a try, right? So all of this is good. The problem is everything else that happens in the show is actually really boring.
Well, we just covered Encounter at Farpoint, the Star Trek The Next Generation pilot, and we talked about how it was really efficient in setting up characters and relationships and the atmosphere and the function of the ship to the point where the story itself was like the dullest part.
Yeah.
I feel that's true here, too. They're setting up the characters, they're setting up the premise. There's this conceit that was stolen straight from the Pink Panther movies where Maserati has...
Well, I want to talk about that, but because I have an extra problem with that. But regardless of that, that's all incidental. But yeah, this is basically just the majority of this is, here's Maserati's adventure for the week, and that adventure is full of padding. There's so much extra room for character work you could have put in there, and it just bugs me.
A woman comes to him and hires him to go off on an adventure, which involves seeking the bottom of the ocean for a sunken ship that might have treasure on it.
Yeah.
Which means, unfortunately, there's going to be a scuba diving sequence. Those are never exciting.
What was your obsession, Hollywood? It's so boring.
If you're going to be doing a nature documentary underwater, I am there.
Sure.
If you want to stage an action sequence underwater... Don't
stop that. It's like a Super Mario water level. Everyone's like, no, never. It's the worst. The episode begins with Maserati. You don't know anything about him. You see Marky Post and she's like sunbathing in the sun as one does. And Maserati is playing tennis. And all of a sudden, Maserati is attacked by two Japanese guys. And he has to fight them to the death. And he's fighting them. He's fighting them with his tennis racket.
It's clearly comedic. It's played for laughs.
It's played whimsically. It's one of those things where it's just like, you know, it's easy to fight ninjas when they wait for you to punch them patiently. But at the end, he's just like, oh, you guys, that was terrible. No. You need to, like, wait until I'm like, I can't see you. I totally heard you step on a twig and you're not fighting good. And they're just like, oh, sorry. So they're doing the Pink Panther Kato surprise me with attacking me kind of vibe.
Attack me randomly just so I'm always ready.
Which is weird because that was supposed to be a joke and now people are doing it seriously, which is bizarre.
You did say it is whimsical, but yeah, this is just something he does. This is a character thing.
So he saw the Pink Panther movies and thought, I'm going to pay people to do this for real, and that's kind of pathetic.
So but the other two martial arts instructors who attack him randomly.
But the problem is he's so much better than them, and he talks down to them, and he like insults one of them for not knowing Japanese, and it's just it starts off on such a sour note. It's basically just like, "Hey, I, the handsome young white rich man, know your culture and fighting styles better than you, and it's hard not to take away a certain note of white superiority in that." And it's really ugly, and it doesn't really get you off on a good note. I get that you're trying to make him seem badass because he's even tougher than the guys who, because we're only looking at them as stereotypical characters, they try to take the curse off of that by having their dialogue be unexpected, but really, we know what you're doing. He's better than the ninjas at being a ninja.
And you can't really sort of take a step back and give the show the benefit of the doubt, because if you look at all the media that surrounded Asian characters in the 1980s, it was all incredibly racist.
We've run around this a lot. There's a lot every show had a Chinatown episode where there was some Chinese restaurant that was being attacked by the triads, and they had the white guy had to save them, thank you, Manimal.
And the master, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. There was... There seems to be like a rotating trends of stereotypes, if you will, like stereotypes that are just hipper than others to include in your shows as history progresses. And the 1980s were really, really bad to Asian Americans. They were really, really cruel. You know, whenever Asian characters would step on screen, you'd always have a gong sound effect. You'd see that in like Police Academy movies.
Yeah.
So even though this particular pilot isn't as ugly as other examples from the era,
it's a throwaway joke, but it's how it starts.
It's still drawing from a lot of these really horrendous stereotypes that were really trendy at the time.
It's a bad foot forward. Marky Post. Oh, what is this? What do you got here?
My phone's making noise. Sorry,
stop making that phone noise. Stop making that phone noise. Marky Post says, yes, I have a new assignment for you. There's a lady who wants to hire you. And fortunately, she lives right down the street, so we don't have to spend a lot of money on this episode. And it's like, great. And she calls and she says, like, hey, I'm being held hostage in my house. And Peter Billingsley immediately like gives him a whole bunch of gadgets and like, oh, they're surrounded by attack dogs. So Peter Billingsley, and this is such a little kid gadget, I love it, gives him a Swedish meatball gun that shoots Swedish meatballs so the dogs will be distracted. And I'm like, see, this is good. He's making stuff kids would make, but it is useful. Mm-hmm. And I like that. That's a good dynamic. So he, you know, sneaks in with a grappling hook. He uses a Swedish meatball gun and he rescues her. But it turns out, aha, I was just testing you to see if you were better than the security guards I already have. And it turns out you are. So here's the deal. Hitler.
So stupid.
Hitler.
Oh, wait, hang on. Sorry. You blindsided me there. So wait, we got Hitler now.
Hitler, back in World War II, back when we had Hitler.
back when there was a Hitler.
Yeah, it's, thank God we don't anymore. He had sent to Japan as like a gesture of his evil goodwill.
His bad will, if you will.
Yeah, some like rare antiquities that had been stolen from Japan that were being housed in Europe, and he's going to send them to Japan. And that submarine had sunk, and nobody knew where it was. And everyone's been like, ooh, where's that shit? And it turns out her dad found it. And her dad was in a boating accident off the coast of Santa Barbara, and which is, by the way, where they all live. Very convenient. Mm. And,
which is just up the coast. It's about, it's an hour drive.
He sent her a weird, mysterious message and she couldn't decode it, and she needs his help decoding it so they can find out where the wreckage is and get all this stuff so they can return it back to Europe or wherever it goes. And there's just one problem. Christopher Lee.
The Christopher Lee. Who,
yeah.
Who, let's just say it, he rarely said no.
Christopher Lee.
If you could afford him, he'd show up.
Christopher Lee had a free weekend and decided to, and deigned to appear in your show. Lucky you. Christopher Lee is playing a Nazi, which must be weird for Christopher Lee, considering he killed Nazis in World War II. He was an assassin. This is true.
He also had his own metal band. He fought in World War I.
He fought in World War One.
He fought in the Hundred Years' War.
Okay, you're just being cute. No, he actually was an assassin in World War II, and he actually was like still like even in his like old age. He lived to be a very old man. He was still like all that shit was still classified. And there's this amazing story where Peter Jackson was shooting the scene in Lord of the Rings that didn't make it into the theatrical cut, where Christopher Lee's character is killed by Wormtongue, the Brad Dourif character, and. Weird thing to leave out if you think about it.
Oh, yeah. But, I don't remember what happened to his character.
Yeah, he's defeated by the Ents, and then that's that. They just don't resolve that. But at the beginning of the extended cut of Return of the King, all like, you know, Viggo Mortensen and all those guys show up and they see what has happened. And Christopher Lee is just like, you may have won the battle, but I will win the war. And then Wormtongue stabs him in the back. And Peter Jackson.
Christopher Lee in the back?
Yeah, and that's how the character dies. He's like, his underling kills him. And Peter Jackson was directing the scene. And he's like, okay, so in this scene, Christopher, you know, Brad Dourif's going to stab you in the back and go, ah! And Christopher Lee took Peter Jackson aside and said, I know what people sound like when you stab them in the back. That's not it. I'm going to make the correct noise. And Peter Jackson's like, yes, sir, Mr. Lee. Because he actually did that in World War II.
How many lives have you taken?
It's a lot. Probably weird. A lot. So it must be weird for Christopher Lee to play a Nazi.
Well,
you know, that must be weird, right?
Like he understands better than anybody the villainy they represent.
Oh, sure. So, yeah. I just think that must be a little surreal, considering, like, I've killed people for having this ideology.
Yeah.
And now I have to play this in a movie. That must be a little weird. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But from my head, I imagine it being a little weird.
I think it's not revealed until later that he's a Nazi. At first, he...
No, they say quite early. He's a leader of like a neo-Nazi party. And he wants to find these trinkets because he believes that because Hitler owned them, they are the right of his party.
I thought he was introduced as just like a rare coin collector. And then they said, oh, wait, he's actually in charge of something in Cetus.
Well, he goes to Maserati and he says, I know that this woman has hired you. And I would like to hire you. I'd like to pay you more because what she hasn't told you, she told you that there are like these rare like prints that you're trying to find that are worth like $50,000 or whatever. There's actually rare like Nazi coins that are underneath, that they're in the wreckage and they're worth like $200,000 per coin. So I will happily give you a lot more than that.
Millions of dollars.
Yeah, I'll give you a lot more money if you'll work for me. And Maserati is actually just saying that, listen, let's leave politics out of that. And I'm like, he's a Nazi. And I love that Marky Post is just like, he offered you how much? He's a Nazi. The answer is no. No. We do not work with Nazis. So it's weird that he entertains it for a second. I don't know if he's trying to lure Christopher Lee into like revealing more about his plan, but it really does seem like he's genuinely considering, I stay out of politics, whatever. I'm a soldier of fortune. I'll go wherever the money is. Weird. But he does say no, and he ends up working with the lady to, oh, by the way, what's her character's name? Hang on.
The woman who hired him?
Yeah, I feel like she's actually kind of a big deal.
Is that Diana, played by Ann Turkle?
Yes, Ann Turkle. They abscond. Christopher Lee gives them like a merry chase. They have to like pretend they steal a milk truck in order to give them the shaft.
Right.
But then Christopher Lee like walks up to the milk truck guy. It's like, so did they steal your milk truck? Yes. Just as we planned. And I'm like, That's a stupid plan. Why would you even? Why would you even do that? So they drive down to Maserati's boat, and they're gonna go find. The brain has figured out the code for where the coordinates are, and there's this bit that, like, you can't tell if it's just bad writing or if it's set up. Where she says, like, "Oh, how'd you figure out the code?" Yeah, it turns out it's like an old, like, children's code, and like your father probably knew it and thought you'd remember it. And she's like, "Oh yeah, I do kind of remember us having a code when we were kids. I can't believe I forgot about that." Foreshadowing, 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 foreshadowing. I'm never gonna use that song again. I think I regret doing that. I thought it would be kind of funny, and no, I think it's really stupid.
Went over like a little balloon there.
No, we're not doing that. You know what? I tried. You got to keep trying.
You never know until you try.
They go down under the waves, and they're there for fucking ever. And Christopher Lee sends some more scuba guys down there, and the kid had invented a ballpoint pen with a knife in it, and that knife is poisoned with a paralytic. That is also, like, makes you go a little, like, you know, goofy in the head. Which really, maybe he shouldn't be making that shit. He's like 10. But okay. So they manage to escape. They can't find the treasure. And they end up absconding to a nearby deserted island. An island where no one is living except these people. Because there are people on the island. It turns out that it's like Mosquito Coast. Like, the dad was just like, you know, I don't trust civilization anymore. I'm just going to live on this island off the coast of Santa Barbara with my wife and two kids. One of whom
is played by a pre-Poltergeist Heather O'Rourke.
Yeah, Heather O'Rourke, the little kid from Poltergeist, is like, they're here. And who sadly died at way too young an age. Yeah, like, it's really tragic what happened to Heather O'Rourke.
There's a really wonderful tribute to Heather O'Rourke in the Shudder TV series Cursed Films.
Yeah.
Cursed Films is a really intelligent show. You think it's going to be like, oh yeah, in this film, people died on the set of this, and the film is cursed, and that makes it like cool and scary. And they talked to the director of Poltergeist 3, and they said, a 12-year-old girl is dead. This is sad. Mm-hmm. And they actually kind of really lean into sort of the sadness and the tragedy of you know, people mm-hmm. dying on the set of a movie, and like what really goes wrong. Heather O'Rourke, and they tell her story and like how she rose to prominence and as a child actress and, how a lot of, her work caused a severe medical problem for her to be misdiagnosed and she was having a lot of health issues when she was around 12 and she passed away at a very early age.
Yeah. It's incredibly tragic. She'll be 12 and it's really sad, but she's here, she's playing a little girl whose father is letting them live on this deserted island, and they're just sort of like, oh, so you're not with the government, are you? No. Well, then they put my shotgun away. And I'm like, great, I love this family. This is a great place. I feel very safe. And then they walk up to their encampment, and it's all very Swiss Family Robinson, and they walk past a grave, and it's like, hey, what's up with that grave? I'll tell you over lunch. And I'm like, great, all of this is awesome, and I feel very safe. But it turns out
I'd feel at ease, but I'm a psychopath.
It turns out that, like, a couple of days ago, like, a dead body washed up on shore, and they couldn't just leave it out there, so they buried it, and the guy had a wallet, and next time I go to the mainland, I'll give it to the police, and we'll deal with it then. And so it's still, like, if you were only taking their word for it, and you didn't know about the, like, the boat crash earlier.
Oh, no, the body washed up on shore.
Sure.
Are those teeth marks in his bones? Donuts? Shark?
But it turns out the kids are, like, playing with these, like, ancient doubloons. And the cache of treasure has been hidden in a cave, and of course the Nazis show up and they want the stuff and they're gonna fight them. And then the kid has run off to try to like save Maserati because the kid has figured out, and long before the movie / the TV movie that this ended up becoming / pilot episode decides to resolve this, that the woman who hired him is not the woman who hired him. She's an imposter.
They look at two photos of two different women wearing a very similar outfit and a similar pose. And they've been switched out. So yeah, it turns out it was a different person all along.
Yeah, so he was hired under false pretenses. And it turns out that this woman has been working with Christopher Lee all along. Which makes no sense whatsoever.
I hate this wrinkle when the person who hired the detective is in on it. Yeah. Because if they never hired a detective, then the detective wouldn't have figured anything out.
Well, even
aren't you tempting fate at that point?
Well, here's the deal. Even if we're going along with this, let's say, for example, that the reason why they hired Maserati is because they couldn't crack this code, and they wanted to bring in someone from the outside. And so here's what you do. You hire Maserati, says, hey, we're trying to crack this code and we can't figure out where the sunken treasure is. Why do you tell him Christopher Lee is a Nazi and is after him? Why don't you just not do that? Mm. Let him find this shit really uneventfully and then surprise him by being surrounded by neo-Nazis and killing him after the deed is done. It makes no sense, even from like a baseline level.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, the villains are trying to stage this elaborate narrative where they can like maybe pin it on him or have him corroborate some sort of story that they're trying to write. But that's not brought up in this particular pilot.
Mm-mm.
They're just sort of shooting themselves in the foot by hiring this guy.
It's a twist for its own sake, not because it actually makes the show better, not because it illuminates anything. It's there because it gives you something to do in the second half of the episode.
Pretty much,
it's really bad writing. it's really extraordinarily bad. Yeah.
So they catch the villains and they arrest the woman and
no, because you're skipping like an 8-hour helicopter stunt.
I also skipped the really long searching underwater scuba sequence as well.
Real fast, there's a whole bit where the kid and Maserati are actually tied up, and they have to use the kid's gadgets to escape. Turns out that the kid's gadgets only work like for like one set of ropes, and then they just grab a knife, which is just like, yeah, instead of giving him like cufflinks that burn through ropes, you could have given him a knife. Which kind of undermines the premise of the series, but okay. Yeah.
Like, and then I'm reminded of the instance where this is apocryphal, but this is a fun story.
Is this about the space shuttle?
The ballpoint pens in space. American scientists couldn't figure out how to get a ballpoint pen to work because the ink was floating around.
Well, the ink wasn't drawing. It was
floating back up into the rear end of the pencil, and so they weren't able. So they finally were able to, after all of this
millions of dollars
of research, were able to find a ballpoint pen that could write in zero gravity, and the Russian scientists use a pencil.
Yeah.
It's like, idiots.
That's apocryphal, but it's the kind of shit we know that shit's happened.
We've all
seen shit like that happen.
Not a true story, but yeah.
The most obvious solution is just smack dab in a good little parable, isn't it? Yeah. So that's going on there. And then Mr. Belvedere shows up with this like mysterious lady who's been following them around. Turns out she's with the German government and she's trying to stop Christopher Lee. She wasn't the sinister person that she appeared to be, because every time the camera cut to her, it played like bum bum bum, like sinister music. Mr. Belvedere and her show up in a helicopter. And
Christopher Hewitt is the actor's name.
And he played Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah.
He is Mr. Belvedere. To me, he will always be Mr. Belvedere. I'm giving him credit. He was credited as Mr. Belvedere. Peter Hewitt.
He had a long, distinguished career. He's more
Christopher
than
Hewitt. Yeah. Christopher Hewitt.
He was in the producers, for goodness sake.
He was in the producers. Yeah. Seriously, all credit in the world. He's a wonderful actor.
He's actually a very good actor.
I'm not insulting. I do this all the time.
I know.
Okay. I refer to actors, I do it too.
I'm completely guilty of that.
This is your line in the sand. You cannot refer to Christopher Hewitt by one of the most famous characters he played. How dare you?
I want people to know his name.
Christopher Hewitt.
Mr. Belvedere guy.
You will remember, hey, audience. You will remember Christopher Hewitt's name forever.
He was the cop in the Lavender Hill Mob.
Oh, that's right, he was in a Ealing comedy.
He's got a long career.
I forgot about that one. Fair enough. Anyway, Maserati jumps onto a helicopter, and the helicopter like chases Christopher Lee around, and he has to jump on and off the helicopter, and Christopher Hewitt has to jump on and off the helicopter. I'm going to say this right now. The helicopter bits are interminably long. However, those are hard stunts. Mm. Those are dangerous stunts, as we would find out like in a year or two when the horrible tragedy happened on the set of Twilight Zone, the movie. Mm. And there's a reason why they don't do helicopter stunts like that anymore. So I'm going to say this right now. Very irresponsible, but kudos to everyone involved for some very difficult, extremely dangerous helicopter stunts in a pilot episode for a TV series.
Well, you can tell really this is...
That's where they put the effort.
It's where they put all the money. Certainly didn't put it into the writing, and you know it doesn't have. And you know, Marky Post and Christopher Hewitt. Christopher Hewitt wasn't a name yet, so he wasn't.
People you would recognize him. Mm-hmm. You've seen him in movies.
Yeah,
he was a noteworthy guest. You know, supporting role.
He wasn't like a celebrity star though. It's not like they'd have to go out of their way to get Christopher Hewitt in their show.
No, but he was a good get though. He was a good get for the show.
And the lead actor isn't a huge star. Marky Post is, you know, reliable.
On the rise, but
yeah,
like...
maybe these days she's maybe best known for a recurring role on Night Court.
I think Night Court's kind of where she yeah. And she was also on The Fall Guy, if memory serves.
Yeah, Night Court and The Fall Guy are like her two biggest roles, but she acted constantly.
Yep.
But she's not, again, not a grabber. So they're not spending
Peter
a lot on the
hadn't
cast.
Done A Christmas Story yet, so he wasn't like a huge child actor.
The kid from The Christmas Story.
Yeah.
A Christmas Story.
Christopher Lee's the get.
Christopher Lee.
He's the one-off villain.
He's
gone after this, you know?
So yeah, Christopher Lee, and who I'm guessing asked for a tidy sum.
I'm sure
and,
he did.
And the helicopter stunt and the underwater photography. That's where all the money went.
Yeah.
And it's a pity because of those three things, Christopher Lee is the only thing that was worth it.
Yeah, the helicopter stunt's like kind of cool, but it did not need to go on for 15 goddamn minutes, and I don't even think that one's an exaggeration.
Yeah, it's impressively that they did it, but it's not impressively.
And it's all done
staged.
In like one take, and people like jumping off of helicopters onto like the shingled roof of buildings, and I'm like, I'm watching this, I'm like, that is legitimately dangerous. I am impressed at your stunt work. There should be more awards for that kind of thing. And it should also not have taken up this much real estate in your show.
Yeah.
But in any case, they managed to stop Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee is just like, well, fair enough. And then Maserati...
it's a fair cop.
Yeah. And then Maserati and the Brain, like, they have dinner with everyone who survives, who's a good guy. They save the real lady who didn't hire him, but, you know, should be saved, obviously. And so that's that. There would be more adventures, is the implication of Maserati and the Brain. And at this point, it's a short episode because it's a short, you know, pilot. We don't have a million things to say about it. So much of it is, again, so much of this pilot is just padding. Mm. It's just helicopter stuff and underwater stuff. There's really not enough to talk about, which is a shame. But let's just do it. Let's just make this a short episode. Was Maserati and the Brain canceled too soon?
Yes, it was. This was a 2-hour pilot. It's an hour and a half once you take out all of the commercials and everything else. But this is a good premise, I think, for a kind of a crime fighting show.
Yeah,
where you have the lead character is sort of a cliche, but he's actually kind of clever, and the lead actor is charismatic.
He's likable.
He's the kind of character you want to keep on watching.
Mm-hmm. He's flawed. He really does. He's completely swayed by the promise of sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, there's all these holes in your story. Well, you are making out with me, so I don't really care.
And it's presented as a flaw. He's not sort of seen as this like unbeatable ladies man. Like he's horny and that's a problem.
Yeah.
Peter Billingsley turns off
his like radio, and like that's what gives Christopher Lee an opportunity to win because the kid can't get in touch with him. So yeah.
Peter Billingsley is wonderful in this.
He's very charming.
He's very active and he's very engaged. He's a very good young actor.
I buy him in this, yeah. It's a silly role, but I buy him in it.
Marky Post is Marky Post. She's just ever the professional. She plays a kind of more down-to-earth character, kind of grounding everything.
I'd want her connecting to
all of these characters to the real world.
I really do think you need to give her more to do if this series goes on.
Well, she needs to be more engaged.
Yeah.
You cut off the martial arts instructors because we don't need them. They're a cliche.
They add nothing to the story. They're a stereotype
and they add nothing. Yeah. You expand Marky Post. You keep Christopher Hewitt. Yep. You keep Peter Billingsley. You keep the lead dude.
Yeah.
And you have this four-part team that are sort of attacking problems from different angles. And they all have something to offer. They all have a different point of view.
They all care about each other, even if they don't always get along, which is nice, actually. Like, you'd think that, like, you know, you want more conflict, and that's what would drive everything. But oftentimes, like, I've been watching that new Superman show, Superman and Lois. I'm a few episodes behind on it, but it's all about Superman and Lois. They've been married for a while and they have two teenage sons and they decide to move back to Smallville to raise them. And a lot of it is just Superman trying to be a good father. And like these two sons who have like very little in common trying to be good brothers to each other. And, like, Lois trying to be, like, a good mom and, like, you know, and, but while also pursuing her career. And, like, I'm watching this and I'm like, I don't give a fuck about any of the superhero shit. I like hanging out with this family. This is actually, like, a really healthy family dynamic that still has, like, engaging drama in it. But it's engaging drama because they're trying to be there for each other and life is just hard, even if you're like a superhero. And I'm watching this, I'm like, I want to live in this universe. I want to visit this every single week. This is very reassuring to me. The older I get, the more I appreciate that kind of television. So if the dynamic in Maserati in the Brain is awesome uncle, gets along well with the kid, nurtures his talent, uncle's girlfriend is like very supportive and everyone's just really happy with each other. And like, well,
and
it's like,
part of the team because she's actually like kind of the manager of the team.
And our butler is, you know, a bit persnickety about things, but really does care about everybody.
He cares.
That's a great dynamic. I want to hang out with them.
So just that core set of characters going out into the world and taking care of problems is, I think, an interesting enough premise. I was reminded of, the Martin Landau pilot we did, Savage.
Really? That's interesting.
Well, in
just because they had the good team dynamic?
In that there's this good team dynamic. I wanted to see
tonally
more.
Tonally, they're very different.
But these are both instances where I want to see that team working together more. Yeah. Because their relationships are established. We don't have to go through that tiresome drama where they learn to get along.
Yeah.
They're already getting along. They already know how they work with one another, and you get to see them interact in positive ways.
You know what I want to see? I want to see a crossover episode with Maserati and the Brain and the Whiz Kids.
That would be great, too.
Wouldn't that be cool?
You know, where the Brain meets the Whiz Kids.
Yeah, that'd be fun. WizKids was
and
a very
along really well.
WizKids was a very early episode we did a cancel too soon, but it was a mid-1980s TV series about a bunch of teenage hackers before that became a cliche. And, you know, it's hit and miss, but it was actually a pretty good show.
Yeah, the characters are really interesting. You can still go to our, we have a TeePublic page still.
Oh, yeah.
And you can get Cancel Too Soon t-shirts still to this day. They never take the store down. And in, one of the characters is named Jeremy, and he's subterfuge in one episode of WizKids. Yeah. Jeremy is like trying to distract somebody by selling, I think it's papers. Like
no. He's doing like lawn work, and it's like I have like a local like team, and we call ourselves, was it the Jeremy Project?
It's the Jeremy Connection.
The Jeremy Connection.
And his name is Jeremy, and he had these matching t-shirts printed up just for this single act of subterfuge, which is going to distract somebody for like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and they're all wearing these t-shirts.
And they're really ugly t-shirts too.
Yeah, they're just plain white t-shirts with black lettering. But it says the Jeremy Connection. We made those. No. I made a Jeremy Connection t-shirt, and you can get the Jeremy Connection t-shirt.
I don't think we ever sold one of those.
We've sold one to my friend Jeremy. I know somebody named Jeremy. Oh my God. Bought a Jeremy Connection t-shirt.
Anyway.
No, nobody's ever... That's like... The tenth of a percent for the tenth of a percent.
Anyway, back on track. I'm torn with whether I think this is canceled too soon. Because on one hand, I do love that dynamic. I think the cast, the principal cast is really, really good. But, you know, if this is like your best foot forward level of quality we're going to get out of this, I wonder how much they're really likely to capitalize on that, you know?
You're concerned because it's really, really padded. Keep in mind, this was a 2-hour pilot, and every episode from here on out was going to be 1 hour, lower budget. They wouldn't have the big action spectacular much. It would be probably a lot more story-driven, one would assume.
You know what? You sold me. Yeah, okay. This was canceled too soon.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, not amazing. I don't know if I would, like, want to see a season and see if they manage to, like, bring it out of its shell a little bit. And if not, then maybe one season is all they get. But yeah, this definitely deserves to be more than a pilot.
Yeah. The characters and the premise are enough.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those things where they blew the premise and they need to rework it. I think they just need to settle into an hour-long slot and get some good stories going, and it would work just perfectly well.
Yeah. That is Maserati and the Brain. We didn't really talk about like the behind the scenes crew. It was directed by Harvey Hart, who had worked on some stuff that we've done before, in particular The Star Lost.
Oh, okay.
He worked on The Star Lost, so
bizarre science fiction series here.
A lot of promise, bad execution. Great premise, bad execution. He worked on Peyton Place, the TV series. He works on a show I've actually been trying to get to for a while, trying to track down every episode of it, which starred Robert Loggia as a cat burglar, and it was called THE Cat. THE is an acronym.
Which I only know from Mystery Science Theater they've made.
Oh, did they reference that? Yeah. I saw like the opening like credits and they're actually pretty stylish and I kind of want to check it out, but I'm having trouble. It's like, it had like a long first season and I'm trying to track down every episode. But it's been a while since I've checked YouTube, which is where you can find Maserati and the Brain, by the way, if you want to check it out for yourself. Maybe now you can find it, but anyway. So yeah. Kudos to the makers of Maserati and the Brain, and once again, Marky Post, you are very sorely missed.
Yeah, rest in peace, Marky Post.
Rest in peace, Marky Post. We'll be back next time with an episode that I've been trying to get Whitney to watch this show for 10 fucking years. This is totally true. This is one of the first things I ever told Whitney. I reckon, please watch this show sometime, and he never got around to it. Partly because for many years it was weirdly unavailable in America.
Yeah, I think you could readily get your hands on it in England. It's a British show, but
yeah, couldn't find it
in the United States on home video or anywhere.
But currently it's on Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah, it just snuck its way on Amazon Prime, and I can watch all six episodes.
Yeah, so we're actually going to be viewing the next episode of Cancel Too Soon. We're going to be reviewing the classic cult comedy, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. If you have not seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, do yourself a favor, just watch the pilot. It's like 20 minutes. Just watch the pilot if you can. I think you're going to laugh your butt off. I really do. I love this show. And I don't want to ruin it. I haven't revisited it in a while, so maybe I'll say like after the pilot it starts to stink. I don't recall. But that pilot is one of the best pilots I've ever seen. And I cannot wait to talk about it with Whitney because I hope you like it too.
I've watched it already, so no comment.
Okay.
I'm going to save it for the episode, but
we will talk about that.
We'll be talking about Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
All right, so that's coming up next on Cancel Too Soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Very special thank you in particular to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. If you're a patron, you get a whole lot of exclusive shows about stuff like the Academy Awards, Batman, Star Trek. You get commentary tracks, you get hangouts. We're just incredibly grateful to you because without you, this show would not exist. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for helping support the show. If you can't afford to support the show financially, and I totally get it, you can help out the show by leaving a review, by subscribing, by recommending it to a friend. All of this stuff really, really helps. You can also email us. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We might read your email in an upcoming episode of We've Got Mail, so feel free to write in with questions, critiques, corrections, anything you want to talk about. We'd love to hear from you. And I'm forgetting anything.
We have a P.O. box. If you want to mail us a letter, like an actual physical piece of paper. We'll read those on the letters episode as well. Mm-hmm. Why not? P.O. Box, make it out to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641-565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
All right. So that is it for us. Thank you, everybody. Once again, be safe out there. Get vaccinated if you haven't already. Wear a mask. Do everything you got to do. Let's get out of this, shall we? until then, that's a wrap. We'll see you next season.